You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We got a gangbuster episodes, ladies and gents. A lot of action early in the offseason. We got some trades. We got a departure of a beloved TV host there. Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Let's go. I know it's the off season, but the Kings bring some noise today, and everybody in the chat's bringing some noise, getting in here early. CJ, good evening, gentlemen. Lots to discuss. Let's go. Carter scores. Who's back? Back again. Go, Kings, go. It's a pango. Give him a little woo. Same thing with Anthony Carrizo, Nav, LFG boys, and Angel come with the go, Kings, go. We got a lot of fans ready to go. I'm ready to go. How about you, boys? Are you guys ready to go?
Oh, yeah. It's been a fun week, right? Busy.
It has been
already. I love it.
How you guys been, man? It's been a couple weeks since we talked.
Yeah.
So we need an off season too, you know, recharge the batteries, but how you guys doing?
Good. I mean, I was telling you, Randall, before we got on here, I've been in the car for like over 7 hours today for work, driving through what's like Chernobyl here in Western New York, thanks to freaking Canada, and these wildfires. It's crazy. So bizarre, by the way. Like, I woke up this morning, I was up just after five to get ready. I had to go to Albany for work, which is a few hours away. And I look outside and it's got like this, it's just this bizarre glow to it. And it was just so weird. But either way, we made it through. My lungs are okay. So how you guys doing?
Have you seen that meme? So you know that meme with, I forget who the actor is. It escapes right now. But he's like in a noose. He's got a noose around his neck and he's looking at the camera. He's like, first time, huh? You know? And I was laughing so hard because all these East Coasters are complaining about air quality and forest fires and all that. And like all these people from California are like, oh, first time.
Yep.
Huh? Yeah. Like,
The air, I could taste the air. Like it was brutal.
Yeah. We've had wildfires out here in Southern California. I'm sure all of our listeners can attest to that, live out here. But I mean, there's been times where I'll wake up and I see ash in my car just from like a fire out in San Bernardino or something like that. But I mean, the scenes that of New York are pretty wild because they never really have had that red kind of glow. I guess sometimes they've had, but I mean, it looks like you guys are in like a Blade Runner movie.
It looks like New York City is getting it probably a little heavier than we got it, but it was a weird glow here too in Rochester. It is. Bizarre.
I mean, everybody likes the smell of campfire, and now you guys get it 24/7.
Well, I was taking my son to pre-K the other day. I'm like, what the hell is going on? What is this smell? What is on my car? And I didn't know what was going on. And then all of a sudden, I saw a little while later on the news. I'm like, okay, well, I guess that explains it.
Well, there you go. Well, let's get started in here. Let's get start hot and heavy. Before the big trade news, there was a little bit of disappointing news. We'll start with that. We'll start with the Faust departure before we get into the trade and deep dive into that. Alex is not being invited back for another contract with the Kings. They're going to roll with Nick Nixon, Evans, and Foxy. I thought, my initial thoughts here was a big disappointment. I think Alex Faust is one of the best play-by-play people in the game. Obviously, I don't watch everybody's home feed. But what was apparent in the playoffs that he's a lot better than what we saw there. And it's One, it's huge shoes to fill a beloved icon in Miller and do an excellent job and win over a lot of fans in that short time that he had to do so. And then now that he's not going to be there, I think it's a travesty. I think that's something that he's iconic with the Kings now, in my opinion, in the last couple of years. It's kind of a tough spot for me because it makes it enjoyable watching games. I thought him and Foxy had a good pairing. I thought they had a good back and forth. I don't know what you guys think. I just think it's sad watching.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you echo a lot of the same sentiment that Kings fans have. It's weird because, like you had said, I mean, stepping into Bob Miller's shoes, it's a legend that you're stepping into. I mean, that's a hard seat to fill. And I guess Alex Faust kind of he grew, Kings fans kind of grew a liking toward him as he got a little bit more chemistry with Foxy, got to know the team a little bit more. Because I mean, he was an outsider when he came in too, right? I mean, it's not like somebody that they brought in internally. This is like a new guy that all of a sudden that is replacing someone that's been with the Kings for so long. And they're like, okay, it's a new voice that we have to hear from after we'd heard the same voice who had been known to be with the team, who had gone through so many ups and downs with this team and then winning the cups and all that good stuff. And then these last 6 years, we've kind of been like, okay, well, Faust has grown on us and you're starting to see a lot of the national attention he's garnering across the country from some of these games he's done. He's done a lot of playoff games this year, especially. He's becoming one of the more up-and-coming play-by-play voices across the league. And not just even in hockey. I mean, in other sports, too. He's done baseball, college football. He's done everything. So to lose a talent like that, it kind of hurts a little bit because I know there's other outliers that are going on here with the whole Bally Sports situation going bankrupt. That seems to be like the main cause of this whole situation of losing Alex. But it's just a little disappointing that they couldn't find a way to keep a talent like that in the press box after fans had kind of just like everything he's been doing so far with the team.
I mean this as a extreme compliment. I actually think he's like bigger than the Kings. He is really growing into a hell of a broadcaster. And like this is a guy that should be doing national broadcasts. He should be, Rando, I could probably rank a lot of NHL broadcasts. And actually, I'm pretty sure Jay Fresh might actually do that for those that follow Jay Fresh Hockey, or if somebody does it, whether maybe it's Dom at the Athletic, they actually rank him. And the Kings, Faust ranks pretty high up there. I consider him, I always try to take my Kings homerism out, but I consider him to be an excellent play-by-play guy. He's a perfect blend because some of the old school guys have that really, there's a lot of personality to them. And some of the newer guys can be a little bit too vanilla. He's got a really nice blend to him. His calls are really, really solid. And I think it's by no accident that he's getting a significant amount of national play, and I think ESPN should be all over him because I think they're really struggling in my opinion, where TNT is much better suited, but he's excellent. So yeah, as a Kings fan, it's tough because I think and you mentioned the word grow. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know how big of a hockey guy he was when he got the full-time NHL job for the Kings. I could be off on this, but I feel like I recall him admitting like he was maybe not learning hockey, but certainly learning the Kings. And he grew into the role over these last few years as well, which made it easy for the Kings fans to be on board with him. So he's excellent at what he does. He is going to be a miss, that's for sure, on the broadcast. I am going to say, listen, I'm partial. I enjoy Nick Nixon. He's a Rochester guy. He's from out here. He called Amherst games before I was born, but so I always got a little bit of a soft spot for Nick Nixon. And you know, back in the days before ESPN Plus and back before NHL Center Ice, I would be sitting on my parents' computer listening to Nick Nixon because that's how I could get the Kings games in Rochester, New York back then. That's just the only way I was able to get it. So you know, it is what it is. I know it's not ideal from a simulcast standpoint, but it is what it is.
I think the only people happy about this are these old old timers like you, Joe. I think I've seen a lot of people like, oh yeah, I enjoy Nick Nixon, and no offense to Nick Nixon, but you know, but I think this, and I want to maybe ask you this: are the Kings blaming Bally's as a cop out? Knowing how much national recognition that he's gotten, he's done Wimbledon, he's done the U.S. Open, he's done some golf, I believe, baseball. Like, he's done NCAA March Madness. He's done a lot of things where he's getting a lot of national recognition, as you say, Joe, in multitude of sports. Like, maybe he asked for more salary than what the Kings were willing to give him, and they blamed it on the situation going forward because of maybe they're not willing to pony up the dough, and that was the easier way to say something. I mean, it seems a little bit like a cop-out, but because he could ask for a lot more money based on what he's done. Mm-hmm. With all his out-of-hockey work, he could claim more money. I just wonder if that was kind of like a timing thing where, you know, he could ask for more money. The Kings didn't have more money because of the situation. And, you know, Carter Score says he has a solution. You know, they could have gave Faust some of Trevor Moore's money, you know, and would have helped us out there. But, yeah, I just wonder if that would might have been something, you know, just bad timing with the TV and him probably wanting a raise for what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems like a cop-out. I mean, it's the timing definitely doesn't help, right? I mean, his contract is ending, and the Kings are coming to a point where we don't even know who's going to be broadcasting the games for the Kings next season. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a timing issue with that, and certainly, I mean, I could see him wanting a little bit more money just based off of the work he's doing. I mean, there were times where, I mean, we'd be at practice, I'd see him there, and then he'd be talking about, like, oh, I got to fly out after the game tonight to hit a game that I'm calling tomorrow. So, like, this guy is a busy guy. He's going to be all over, and he's going to be snatched up like that, like, right away. So, it's just tough. I mean, like Joe mentioned, I mean, Kings fans, it's almost bittersweet because we're not really so upset that Nick Nixon's going to be calling the games now. It's just more or less that we're losing a talent like Alex Faust. Yeah. Because I'm with you, Joe. Like, I love listening to Nick Nixon. I mean, growing up out here at the AM radio, we've always, I mean, Nick Nixon's been part of the Kings just as much as Bob Miller was. So to have him still in the booth helps a little bit with the situation. It's just, I get upset with some of the things that the Kings have done lately about some of these off-ice situations. I mean, like, going from AM radio out here to just purely iHeart radio, that seems a little disappointing. Now you have this situation. I mean, the whole Bally Sports conundrum, it's just that never really worked out. I mean, there's always been issues, technical issues with the stream and the audio and everything like that. It's just, I just want to have some continuity. I want to have something that we could, that makes it easier to access Kings games as a fan, really. And I look at, like, what the Vegas Golden Knights did with signing up with Scripps Sports. And I put that in the article that they're going to be broadcasting their games on local television for free to all their fans. If the Kings are able to do something like that, I think that not only will, sure, it's going to be a little bit less revenue that they would probably get from what they had with Bally's, but you're going to get so many more fans that are going to be able to watch the game, going to want to go to games, buy merchandise and stuff like that, and hopefully grow the sport of hockey a little bit more and maybe gain a little bit more fans by doing that. So I wonder if that's something that the Kings will look toward after this kind of disappointing move right here.
We talked about this a little bit when they were having troubles, and I always thought this was something that LA should do. And I know that all of them have their own self-interest, but you have, like, the Longhorns network, right? Like, the Texas Longhorns have their own network that broadcasts all their sports all the time. Men, women, fall, spring, summer, whatever. Like, there's five teams in LA, major teams. If you include the soccer, you got seven. Like, if they form their own television channel, charged you $50 or $40 or $30, $25, whatever you want per month, and you get all those teams. So you get both Clippers, Lakers, you get Dodgers, you get Angels, you get LA Galaxy, LAFC, Kings, like Ducks. Like, wouldn't that be worth it for most LA people who are, especially if you're only interested in one sport, $25 a month is not a lot. But if you're interested in multiple sports, that's a no-brainer. Like, that's a no-brainer at that point, and you could just stream it at all times.
Well, you're talking about
pretty much Spectrum Sportsnet out here. So the Lakers and the Dodgers both have their own channel out here through Spectrum Sportsnet, which is Time Warner. So a lot of, I've seen a lot of fans and myself included, maybe think like, hey, maybe the Kings can gravitate toward that situation, have their own channel, much like the Lakers or the Dodgers do, or even just kind of latch on to one of those channels themselves. Cause I mean, but the thing is like, I mean, it's the Lakers and Dodgers we're talking about. Their fans are a little bit larger than what the Kings fans are out here in Los Angeles. But I mean, I agree with you. I think a lot of fans would most willingly pay for a monthly subscription of having easier access to watching and listening to Kings games. Cause the whole thing with Bally's that they tried to do with the Bally Sports Plus, it never really worked out. I heard about issues all the time that when people were trying to sign up. So I just want things to be easier for fans. So I want it to be, cause I mean, I'm a fan myself too. And when I'm not at the game, I want to be able to make it easier for me to watch games. Cause this whole situation the country is in really is it's cord cutting. Not a lot of people are going to have satellite, DirecTV, Dish TV, or even whatever, or even cable nowadays. Everyone's cord cutting and doing through streaming. So I would love to see the Kings go to something like that, but it's just tough because that's a large chunk of revenue that the team is losing. But it's also, we're talking about AEG. The Kings are like top 10 in value in the NHL. So it's not like they're going to be worried about not having enough money for it.
Or just have no blackouts on ESPN Plus, and then that's it. Like, there you go.
Yeah, you probably have to negotiate a little bit with ESPN on that one, but yeah, that would be nice.
Well, last question before we get into the trade here. I think, CJ, this is kind of interesting here. Do you think this affects Patrick O'Neill or Carlin as well with the cuts coming up with multiple networks?
I haven't heard anything. Yeah, I don't know. So I'm not sure. I can't
remember. And I won't pretend to know. It's a good question.
I mean, we hope they stay, right? I mean, I love Patio. I mean, Patio is really cool guy. He does a really good job. If you guys, for the Angel fans out there, he does a really good job. He's a play-by-play voice for the Angels. On and off there, and he does a great job. I mean, Carlin too, awesome job. And they've also been these are two people that also have been around the organization for a long time. Mm-hmm. So that would be another tough pill to swallow for
Carlin. Absolutely loves the Kings, loves hockey in LA. Obviously her husband is the owner of Violent Gentlemen and Ducks fan. Like they're big in the community there, so
yeah,
definitely would be a hard loss.
Violent Gentlemen sure right now.
There you go. Speaking of hard losses, it wasn't that hard for everybody else this morning or yesterday morning waking up to the trade here. So it's a three-team trade. You're looking at Columbus and Philadelphia were involved. You're looking at Peterson on the way out. We never thought it would be possible. We thought it was a far dream, pipe dream, if you will. Going to Philadelphia with Walker, Granz. Philadelphia's also getting the first-round pick that we sent to Columbus, the second-round pick. We're getting a couple UFAs and a lot of cap space. We're taking on Provorov's contract, and Columbus is getting Provorov. So initial thoughts on the trade. What do you guys think when it capped? I mean, I heard about it first from my brother. Normally my brother doesn't send me news, but he texted in our group thread. He's like, hey, did you see this from Elliot Friedman? And I was like, no, but let's look it up. So how did you guys hear about it, and what were your guys' thoughts?
I mean, I saw it on Twitter from Friedman. When I heard the trade that was being worked out, I think his initial tweet was just the teams that were involved.
We're talking, yeah.
Yeah, so I think my initial thoughts were actually pointed to Provorov. I was like, oh, Provorov might be a King. That's what I thought at first. And I think someone had also mentioned that there was a defenseman involved, so I think that's why my initial thoughts went to that. But then once he said Cal Peterson was involved, I mean, I almost fell over my chair. I mean, this was a trade that we all wanted to see happen, but it was almost like you said, it was like a pipe dream. Like we never thought this could actually come to fruition, and to see it all happen, I mean, it's something that we knew needed to happen. That Rob Blake was going to be number one on his priority list, right? I mean, clearing cap space. In order to upgrade the lineup, they had to clear out some of the cap space, and Cal Peterson was the number one target, and Sean Walker was not a surprise either. So I think my overall thoughts on the trade were I thought Rob Blake did really well. Just looking specifically at the trade itself. I mean, I know a lot of people want to like tie this with the Cal Peterson contract together, which makes a ton of sense because this is the reason the trade is being made. But if you're looking specifically just at this trade, you have to give Rob Blake a ton of credit for what he was able to do, especially in this flat cap environment. Clearing cap space right now is a really, really tough thing to do. And we're seeing it across the NHL. I mean, look at other teams. I've seen Oilers fans tweeting about, like, why isn't Ken Holland doing something like this? What? How come he can't figure out a trade like this? So, I mean, this trade almost made other teams and fans jealous of what the space that Rob Blake was able to make in terms of helping out with other signings and stuff like that. So, I mean, to trade away a goaltender who was not even arguably pretty much the worst goaltender in the league last year, who got sent to the AHL, never even really wowed down there either, to figure out how to get that off the books and even send out Sean Walker, another player who a lot of people weren't surprised to see go, without really paying too much. I don't think the payment to make that happen was too high. I think you have to give Rob Blake a lot of praise for doing so.
Joe, what was your initial thoughts there, my man?
My initial thought was I might have timed that Carter Hart to LA thing pretty good, but it didn't end up happening, obviously. But yeah, like Russ, I saw Friedman's tweet and then immediately clicked on Elliot Friedman to make sure it was the real Elliot Friedman. And I think you see, I know everybody wants to think, well, just find a rebuilding team, just dump your contracts there. It's easy. It's not easy. And the fact that they required a third team to do this, and they required a team to take on that wanted Provorov. So there was so many moving parts in this deal. It wasn't just, oh, they dumped Peterson, they got out of his deal, yay. Like, there was more to it. So it was very complicated to pull off. So I do give Blake credit for that. I am one of those people, Russ. I'm not going to give him too many hugs here. He got out of his own mess. So I'm glad he got out of it. He needed to get out of it. But, like, it's not as if this was – remember when Kyle Dubas went to Toronto and he, like, immediately got out of David Clarkson's contract and it was like, that's the greatest thing you could ever do. I'll give him credit for that. I'm only going to go so far with praising Blake. I think all things considered, it is, you know, it could have been worse. There wasn't, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, you lose the second. You already don't have a first this year. You lose your second. You lose what is still, I consider to be a good prospect, at least. Maybe not a top prospect, but a solid prospect. And, you know, you're taking on somebody's money that never, you know, played for you. So, like, it's better than it could have been, no question about it. And at the end of the day, got out of the Cal Peterson contract. So the way I look at it is I'm not doing, like, cartwheels here. I'm not going to go give him praises and hugs because, again, I think it's his own mess that he created. So let's just move on and go forward. As far as the trade, like, I thought Philly did great. What a job by Briere, because I don't think Provorov's all that good, frankly. And for a rebuilding team to get a Helge Granz, to get a first-round pick, 2 second-round picks, he did a pretty good job just for really getting rid of Ivan Provorov. So interesting deal all around, that's for sure. And at the end of the day, from a Kings standpoint, finally the Cal Peterson saga is over, and we can just move on from that.
Yeah, let's get into each part of this trade. And I kind of dissect it a little bit. Let's start with the Cal contract. Obviously, the albatross in the room, you know, not a great signing there, was plugging up the AHL. And I think that's the best part about this whole thing, not just the cap space that he could be used for the player that we're going to talk about later in Gavrikov, but the future of the Kings. So they signed Portillo, as his name is now, I heard it's pronounced, you know, got that Spanish yeah sound right there at the end. But Portillo and Vallalta, you know, now they're going to actually get some time in the AHL. I thought last year was a wasted year for Vallalta because they had to do something with Peterson. This opened some stuff up there. You know, what do you guys think about the cap that was created and in the aftermath with the goalie situation in the Kings organization?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with the goalie situation. I mean, we talk about, like, we're looking at the cap space that the Kings created. I mean, it's not really all that much. I mean, even just a little bit of cap space seems like a lot, though, in this kind of flat cap situation that the NHL is in. But by eating some of that Provorov contract and sending away Sean Walker along with Cal, you're only opening up about $5 million this year, but then only opening up about $3 million next year. So it's not really a ton. I mean, it seems like a lot, like I mentioned, with the flat cap. But
So I don't know what will happen with the goalie situation, because I mean, after the contract with Gavrikov that we'll talk about later, there's only Phoenix Copley in on the books right now. And there's not really going to be that much money after a Gabe Vilardi contract that we're all expecting, some other re-signings, some qualifying offers for other RFAs. So whether that means that there will be other moves made to clear money, which, I mean, at this point, I hope. Like, I've mentioned Arvidsson being up on the trade block, or I've heard out there. I don't see a reason to trade any of those type of players, because if you're able to trade Cal Peterson's contract, I feel like that's the move that was necessary to make in order to make cap space. So there's no real need to get rid of any of those players. But it'll be interesting to see how they open up a little bit more space to get another goalie in the organization.
Yeah, that's the thing that depends, though, Russ, because there's seven and change ballpark, I think, cap space. And like you said, we'll see what Vilardi gets. If he gets into that $3 to $4 million range, well, that cuts that down in half. And then you've got a few million to work with for the RFAs and qualifying offers. Is that enough left over to sign a goalie? Probably not. So, and then the question is, do they go the signing goaltender route, or do they go for a trade route? Which, either way, yeah, I mean, it seems like there's going to have to still be a little bit of money moved out somehow and somewhere. Maybe to your point, maybe if they're going to opt to go for a free agent, maybe the money doesn't have to come from one of those two. Maybe they can get a cheap deal, and maybe there's a Grundstrom type of trade, something along those lines, that's a little bit less expensive. The one thing I'll consider with this trade, we've talked about for a long time now, the Kings' depth on the right side, right? I would argue that while they still have it, I'm no more. Like, they traded Faber in a really good deal. They traded Granz, which was, again, it wasn't good asset management, but it was the cost of getting rid of the contract. So now you have Durzi, it comes of like the younger guys like Durzi, Spence, and Clark. That's your kind of quote unquote future on the right side, if you will. And I don't trade any one of these guys, because we have seen time and again, you're going to need 7, 8, 9 defensemen to get through a season. So if you trade Durzi, which I know everybody's already lining up to do, you're all of a sudden really thin back there. Because offhand, I can't think of anybody that's necessarily ready to step in from Ontario to fill a solid depth role. Obviously, that can change. It's early. It's only June.
Spence and
I'm thinking Spence is somebody that can play in the NHL. So that's my point. Is
Spence and Clark on the lineup, right?
Exactly. So my point is, I don't know that I'm looking to now. I think they've made the deals of their right D that they had. Unfortunately, one of them has to come in a cap dump, but I don't know that I want to trade any of these guys now, because I think they're all pretty valuable. I think they're all going to play a role this year, because as we've seen, injuries happen, poor play happens, things happen. Like, I don't know what you guys think.
But okay, let's talk about that. We talked about this goalie room. Obviously, another out was Sean Walker, right? We talked about it ad nauseum, the depth on the right side, and then the lack of playing time. And I'll say it over and over and over again. You have to earn your spot, and you have to be given a spot. You have to give them the opportunity to earn the spot. And if there's no opportunity, which is what we're saying, like, where do we see Clark playing, is what most of us were saying at the beginning of the year. I said, I don't give an F. He needs to be on the roster. I don't care where Walker's playing. That was my view, but the Kings saw it differently. Now they're opening up a spot, giving that an open. Now it's going to be Doughty, Roy, and either Clark or Spence, most likely. I would probably see Durzi on the left side, or you have Gavrikov second pair if they do the Gavrikov-Roy thing going on, or Roy jumps down. I mean, there's all kinds of combinations and see where these guys progress, but now there's an open spot for either Spence or Clark to walk through. Either they believe Spence is ready and Clark will be the number one defenseman in the AHL, or Clark will blow the doors open and leave no doubt and he'll be on the roster. So what are your thoughts on that? And this, does this move, is moving Walker the best part of this trade, because it opens up door for a playmaker like Spence or Clark to come in and step in?
Yeah, you kind of killed two birds with one stone there in terms of clearing out a little bit of cap space this season and then opening up that roster spot for whether it be Jordan Spence or Brandt Clark. But, I mean, I'm with Joe. I'm expecting – I mean, I would love to see Spence and Clark on the opening night roster and, for me, have Sean Durzi be the seventh defenseman. That's why, I'm so surprised by everybody that wants to trade Durzi. It makes no sense to me. I mean, yeah, you can be upset with some of the mistakes that he's made, some of the mental lapses he's had, but this is a player that led the team in points per 60 as a defenseman in all situations. He quarterbacked the second power play unit on a power play that was top five, sometimes top three in the NHL last year. I mean, he's only being paid $1.7 million. It's not a player that's making $4 plus $5 million next year. So if you trade Durzi, you're only getting like maybe $700,000 in cap space because you have to replace Durzi with another player. You can't just trade him and then like, okay, we're only going to run six defensemen next season. No, you have to have another seventh defenseman in the books. And whether that's Toby Bjornfoot, I mean, yeah, like that's $700,000 you're saving for a player that just led your defense in points per 60 last year. Doesn't seem like a smart situation where you want to trade for a second round pick. I don't, that doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, this is a player that has played his second season on the left side, kind of forced in that situation just because of the situation that the Kings were in on defense. So now because of that, I guess problem that Rob Blake created by having so many right shot defensemen, it's his fault that all of a sudden like, oh, he's being played on the left side. So we have to really just get rid of him and ship him off. No, I think Sean Durzi had kind of proved himself to be one of the better young defensemen on the Kings, and I think it should stay. And if it's only going to cost the Kings another year at $1.7 million and you can kind of interchange him back on the left side, right side, even have him as a seventh defenseman at times, I'm totally fine with that. I mean, I just – it doesn't make any sense to me why he needs to be traded. But, I mean, I agree with Joe too. I think the depth that we've talked about
– I just want to give you one of these, Russ. That was good. I mean, it was good. Yeah. I think a lot of fans are – I mean, like right here, Russ, Clark, and Spencer, all three the same. Makes no sense to keep them all. I think this is BS. I think the fact that you asked a young player who is still developing – not only to play extreme minutes last year with a bunch of the injuries, now you're like, hey, I'm glad you got comfortable now, but now you got to play the left side. And him and Roy, now you could attribute that to Roy because he's good with anybody, was the best Corsi defenseman pair on the Kings until they got Gavrikov. Like, part of that is and on the 1-3-1, Durzi's playing the left. He's not the puck retrieval guy. He's the wall guy. So he's playing on his offside, trying to play defense, which he isn't fond of. And he did a phenomenal job for most of the season. Yeah, you're going to get these lapses here and there. But like you said, point per 60 for defenseman, power play, I get it. You know, he has a lot of lapses. But what you're saying is, oh, he's defensively, you know, enamored. Well, nobody was saying that about Quinn Hughes, right? They still want Quinn Hughes. He can't play defense either. But he brings a lot of offensively to that team. There's always going to be deficiencies. And what I think is more of what the Kings are, or maybe Kings fans, or me, also speak for myself, is that Rob Blake put the Durzi in that situation by not having adequate preparation for the team, whether it's busting on the pick for Bjornfoot, I wouldn't call him a bust yet, but not hitting a home run on Bjornfoot, or not having adequate on the left side, or failing to give Movari a full season shot. Pick your poison there. You play a guy who is willing to do whatever it takes to win. And I thought Durzi, for the most part, all season long, did an adequate job.
Yeah. And listen, like I've said this before, what is going to happen, not if, but when Jordan Spence and Brandt Clark, the Golden Boys, make glaring mistakes because they're playing a little bit risky and it ends up in the back of the King's net. Cause guess what, guys, that's going to happen.
No. And it's like Brandt Clark can do no wrong,
but like, you have to be, you know, this is going to happen with, you cannot have a defensive group full of Mikey Anderson's guys. I'm sorry. Like I'm not meaning guys as in you, cause I think we're on the same page. It's just, you're going to have to get a little bit more skill into this defense group because it's a lot of the same steady Eddie, really solid. Don't get me wrong, but you know, it's something that I've been harping on for a while now. Like, you got to have guys that can move pucks a bit and be a bit more mobile. And having a trio of those three young guys as their third pair, I actually would be surprised if the Kings go with it. I'll be honest with you. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Clark and Spence start in Ontario next year, and they go sign either a veteran left D or bring up Bjornfoot or something like that. Like, none of that would surprise me, but I'm open to the idea of having these guys play because, you know, we talked about Gavrikov strengthening the strength. And I mean, and he really strengthened the strength because go look at Dursey's zone entry defense. Excellent. He was really good zone entry defense because Randon, as you pointed out, he plays the left side when he was with Roy 1-3-1. If you're not good at zone entry defense as the left defenseman in the LA system, then you got a serious problem. Like, how can you not be? And Dursey was good. And if Dursey was good, then a lot of people can be. And obviously Gavrikov was great. Mike Anderson, he's really good. So I just think that if people are already sour on Dursey because of some of his mistakes, just wait till Spence and Clark make them, because they're gonna, and they're gonna be, I think the Kings as a fan base over the last decade or so are just so used to the kind of, I'll say Daryl Sutter for lack of a better term, but like that they won the cups on this foundation of like defense and goaltending. And like, you know, as the game has evolved, like the game in 2023, 2024 is not the same as it was in 2012 with the amount of skill and speed that we're seeing and the depth that we're seeing. So like, I'm just, it's going to change and it has to evolve. And with that is going to come. And listen, you have players like Clark, Spence, and Dursey. You drafted Clark 8th overall. So you have some sort of a vision for like, okay, this is an incredibly high-skilled offensive first defenseman. They wouldn't have drafted him if they didn't like him. So they know what he is, and they know that he's not going to be, you know, he may not be winning a Norris, but
he's not Drew Doughty. He's going to be all offense all the time.
But there's ways to go about playing defense. And listen, like, let's be honest, if he's playing in the offensive zone more often than he's in the defensive zone, guess what? That's pretty good. Like, that's the whole thing with Erik Karlsson. And I know people don't love that he's, you know, in the Norris discussion, but like, you look at the 5-on-5 numbers when the Sharks had Karlsson on the ice versus anybody else, they were a different team. Not even by a little bit, like by a lot of bit. They were a totally different team. He was that much better. He was that good. So it's like, if you can affect the game that way and you can impact your team that way, then yeah, you don't have to be an elite defensive defenseman to do so. So I think that the Kings, it's a long-winded way of saying, like, I agree wholeheartedly with Russ's rant there on Dursey. And I also think, given the depth situation now on the right side, I don't think they trade him. I think the only way ideal are a Dursey or a Spence is if you are bringing in an impact player. Now, that's not going to be a defenseman because they've just shored up their top four. Is it a goalie? Maybe. Maybe there's a deal for Connor Hellebuyck out there. I don't know. Is it a forward? I'm not going to rule out the potential for a top six forward. You never know. Blake may take a swing somewhere. Mm-hmm. Not going to rule it out. But like, otherwise, to your point, Russ, if you trade Dursey, you got to fill him in with somebody. So it's not as if you're losing that money. It's like, oh, we're freeing up this much money. Not really. You got to play a set. You have to have another defenseman come in. So I just don't think that it's a necessary move. I think it's more likely that he stays and one or both of Clark and or Spence are in Ontario. And maybe there's a veteran defenseman that plays on the third pair at a cheap deal. Maybe something like that. But
Jack Fry coming in here with the freed up money from Cal. I'd like to see Blake looking to signing Gostisbehere in a semi-cheap deal for the third left side.
But that's the thing.
Veteran is what there. A lot of I'm just saying the fans are thinking maybe a veteran third pair instead of having a guy play on the left.
What's the difference between Shane Gostisbehere and Sean Dursey? What's really you're going to be paying probably double
Shane Gostisbehere, which you get from Sean Durzi. Like, yeah, okay, I'll give that Gostisbehere is probably a better player than Durzi. But, I mean, even when you look at comparing, are we so sure, 100% sure that Jordan Spence is a better player right now than Sean Durzi? I'm not. I mean, I haven't seen enough of Jordan Spence to think that. I've seen 100 games of Sean Durzi. I kind of know what to expect. You're going to get really good times and you're going to get some really bad times. But, I mean, I look back to one of the comments that our buddy Anthony Carrazzo made here is, like, did we just forget, like, 2 years ago when Sean Durzi stepped in for Drew Doughty when he went down, that Sean Durzi pretty much carried our power play, even though it was kind of bad, but pretty much carried the top of the defense on the right side for that whole season as a rookie? Like, and then came into the next year, like, thinking, like, oh, now you got to be forced on the left side. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, we're just kind of forgetting everything that he does and focusing so much on some of the negative things that he's done with the team. So
it's very easy to remember the bad stuff. It's easy to remember the mistakes because they tend to be glaring, especially when they end up in the back of your net. And it's just easy. I mean, it is what it is. Like, the one thing, going back to Alex Faust for a second, I went back and I watched the Martin Furk goal because of the I just loved his call on it. It was very simple, but perfect. Remember the play Durzi made at the blue line? The against the Panthers, it was
the last circle, beautiful against Barkov, Sasha Barkov.
No defenseman other than probably Doughty on in LA makes that play right now. You know, I was watching the semi sidetrack, like the goal Shea Theodore scored the other day when he like did a spin, walked the blue line, boom, 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 boom. There's not a Kings defenseman that can do that, and maybe Doughty, maybe, but like, as smooth as Shea Theodore made that look, like, I know everybody's going to talk about the Vegas size, but the Kings need more skill and they need guys like, and I would, it was Spence. The thing with Spence, I don't know what else he's got to do in the AHL. He's checking a lot of boxes there. So I hope he gets an extended look in camp to see, is he ready? Cause I agree, Russ. I don't know that he's ready, but he's definitely showing that, you know, he's like a point of game guy in the AHL or almost for a second straight year. So it's like, He's somebody that hopefully gets at least an extended look. But again, we've seen Rob Blake. Hey, he's got an option to go. He can still go down. He's waivers exempt. He very well could start. Same thing with Brant Clark.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that I want to get away from this whole mindset of like having to have, like, when we'll talk about Gavrikov, maybe I should just kind of leave it for that. But I want to get away from that mindset of having, oh, we need to have that solid shutdown defensive pairing. Like, why can't we be a little bit more exciting than that? Why do we have to have just one pairing that's like going to be that shutdown defensive pairing?
Well, they
like,
have it, like, now. They have it. Gavrikov and Roy.
I just want to be a little bit more explosive. That's me all. Too. I want to have a little bit more excitement.
Well, yeah. I want to get into this a little bit more before we get back in the trade. There are multiple people have talked, and there's been plenty of people who are bringing in that the – you brought up Joe a little bit. I think the NHL is in a little bit of a hybrid style of their game. There's a lot of older players that are big, big bodies hitting. There's a lot of new players with a lot of speed. And there's been a lot of data out there that is saying that puck movement and zone exits are more important than a shutdown defenseman because you're initiating the inertia of going in the other direction rather than just being shut down. But then on the power play, you need those shutdown guys. You need those long guys, those big guys that have big sticks and can get in lanes and passing lanes. So I think the NHL is kind of in a hybrid atmosphere where you see guys like Gavrikov who aren't exactly puck movers but showed a little bit more offensive skill than I thought, but still have that access to those big sticks. But then his metrics weren't good on the defensive side of the penalty kill. I think there's a lot of hey, this guy, we need skill, we need puck movement, hey, we need size, we need grit, we need all this. I think it's just – one, I think it's Twitter's toxic negativity to where you're always looking to point out something negative about a team. And two, I think it's the state of the NHL where we're not really full skill. We're not really full, you know, back in the 90s where it was all enforcers, right? There was no skill. It was just beating people up. Like you're looking at a different part of the NHL where teams don't really know how to build a balanced offensive or defensive core, you know, because of how everybody different plays the game.
Well, it's true, and obviously it can be system dependent too, but in a best case scenario, you have a defense group like Vegas who can all skate. Now, obviously, Shea Theodore skates is a bit more of upper echelon in there, but they can all move okay. Petrangelo maybe a little less these days than he used to, but like he, but and they're big. Like that's obviously best case scenario. I'm not sitting here saying the Kings need to have a D core filled with 5'8" defensemen. You know what I mean? So thank you, Shankmaster. That's right. Yeah, listen, there are however many people are in this.
40 go, plus.
Go hit the like button. Cost nothing. And you know what? We've gotten people that are, you know, they sometimes they wonder, oh man, I'm late to the show. Hit the subscribe button. You get a little bell, a little notification every time we go live. Boom, you get the notification so you don't miss it. Hit the like, hit the subscribe. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Shankmaster. That a baby.
Thank you.
But getting back to what I was saying, like in a perfect world, you got guys that are big and can move. Like that's great. But you have to find a way to have a little bit of a blend here and have a little bit more, you know, you have to be able to get pucks out of your zone. And the Kings were in a situation where, like, they weren't a small team. I don't know where this, like, idea is that the Kings are small. Like, when you look at their back end, it's not huge, but Gavrikov certainly isn't small. Edler wasn't small. Roy's not small. Doughty is heavy if he's not small. Mikey Anderson plays a pretty big game. So it's like, I don't know. I don't look at the decor and say that they were small. I think that they struggle moving pucks. That's just my opinion. It is what it is, but so I don't know. I you're right, Randon. Like there is definitely still, especially come playoff times, that, you know, you got to be able to, even if you're not initiating the physical play, you have to be able to like withstand it and play through it. No question about that. So that's why I said if there's anything, maybe the Kings in the bottom six could use a little bit, could get a little thicker down there. But
Corey Perry. No, I mean, Joe, you've brought up the Buffalo Sabres multiple times. And I remember watching the Sabres toward the end of the year just because they play that hybrid kind of style where their defensemen are pretty much at the goal line most of the time in the offensive zone. And I brought this up on the Twitter spaces I did the other day. It's like, I wonder if the NHL will eventually get to the point where the same kind of place that basketball is in at this point, where you just have players that can play point guard, and then you can even play center. I mean, look at a player like LeBron James on the Lakers. He can play anywhere. He can play Draymond Green on the Warriors. He can play any position. I mean, I wonder if the NHL eventually gets to that point, because if you look at some of the best defensemen in the NHL, I mean, Cale Makar will be anywhere in the offensive zone. Rasmus Dahlin will be anywhere in the offensive zone. Same with Adam Fox. So, I mean, we'll probably end up seeing that a little bit more with Brant Clark and Jordan Spence. And even we've seen some of that with Sean Durzi. I just want them to have the freedom to be able to use their talents to the best of their abilities, because we're going to have a team that's going to be really skillful here, probably even just next year, where we're going to have more defensemen that have that capability to skate the puck up ice than we've probably had in years past. So it's, I think our team, just to kind of evaluate the trade as a whole, I think our team definitely got better after this trade alone. And even before the Gavrikov move, because I'm looking, it's the first time where I look at the Kings defense and I don't really see a spot or a player where I'm like, oh man, it's kind of like a filler player for right now. It's almost like every player is here and looking to be productive. And going to have to produce in order to keep their spot, and they should, because that's what they brought in for them in here to do.
Yep.
Before we get into the Gavrikov contract, we're going to toss it over to our sponsors at DraftKings. DraftKings is keeping it short and sweet. That's why we're going to light the lamp during hockey playoffs with DraftKings Sportsbook. New customers can bet $5 or have a $5 bet and get $250 in bonus bets instantly. Now, download DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code THPN. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So getting into the contract, we've got 2 years, a little over, right around the 5.8, 5.9 million range there. What did the final number come in at? It was what, 585?
5875.
5875. So 2 years, 5875. I know it was a little too rich for my blood as far as the amount there, but obviously I thought it could have been 5-6 years on the contract, so I'm kind of happy about that. What do you think about the contract as a whole, and then we'll get to Gavrikov's impact going forward in these next few seasons?
I mean, I thought the deal was good. So I was terrified of a long-term deal. Terrified. And I genuinely thought and still kind of think that if he did hit the market, that there's a team that would have given him a long-term deal. Like a lot of people are surprised that he took two. I think you mentioned it, Russ, that the cap is projected to go up in 2 years. So maybe he's banking on that. So I was really nervous about a lengthy deal for him, but I think this is great actually for the Kings. It's probably more of a team friendly deal if anything, because it's a little risky on Gavrikov's part to he's probably leaving money on the table. But that said, you know, he gets a 2 year deal. The Kings are not committed long term here, and they get another 2 years because really, again, they didn't get a chance to see him for a full season. Now they get a chance to see him for a full season. And, you know, assuming it goes well, then maybe they, you know, they work something out later. But I think that this deal is very reasonable. Again, at 2 years, I'm willing to go. I mean, we've talked about before, I didn't want to go over $5 million for this player, but at 2 years, I'm perfectly comfortable doing that. I think it's like a really good kind of bridge because he's going to be 28 in November this year. So at the end of 2 years, he'll be entering that what would be a third season at age 30. And I get nervous with defensemen of this skill set and how they age as they get to through the 30s. So I really like the 2 years personally.
Yeah. I think both sides got exactly probably what they wanted here.
Especially if he wanted a 2 year deal. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people at first were surprised that he only wanted 2 years. I mean, myself included. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, like you mentioned when we were talking about, the whole situation with the flat cap, he's really betting on himself because if he's able to hit unrestricted free agency once again, he'll be 29, I think 29, right? At the time, pretty much his 30th year.
He'll be entering his age 30 season. Yeah.
So, but to hit UFA status when the salary cap is projected to go way up with all the TV deals clicking in and getting away from the flat cap situation, I think he can cash in a little bit more. So I do wonder if the team maybe was looking for a little bit longer term. I'm glad they weren't given that opportunity by the player because I'm with you, Joe. I mean, we've seen these kind of players not really age well in terms of long-term deals. So, and we've also only seen Gavrikov for a handful of games too, which were a really good sample size in terms of his play with the team. So, I think it's a really team-friendly deal in terms of having the shorter term because then you'll have a little bit more cap space after this season with Kopitar's deal over and a lot of other free agents coming into play. I think the Kings have like $42 million in cap space after next season. So wow, That'll be another fun offseason to watch. But, yeah, I think to have two years at the $5.8 million cap hit, I think it's great for the player and great for the team. And hopefully we'll see how the positions line up coming into training camp.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think probably about a million too high of what I thought that he'd probably would like him to be at, but I understand. And like you said, it kind of gives the Kings position to maneuver, right? Cause outs in the next 2 years, after that 2 years, your only players on your roster are going to be Mikey Anderson, Drew Doughty, Fiala, and Kempe at that point. Right. I mean,
more
Dano,
more and Dano, yeah. So you got six guys.
Defense, though, I think, yeah, it's just Doughty and Anderson, I believe,
at the moment. So, yeah.
So you got six players total, two defensemen. Yeah, six players total, defensemen, obviously RFAs, but like guys that are, you know, really penciled in. Like those are the players on the team. So you got a lot of movement. Hopefully, you get big prospect movement in the Fagimos and Francisco Pinelli's. Maybe we hear more of the other Jack Hughes progressing in college and that type of thing. And you have those fill in depth and Alex Turcotte, maybe, if you will, kind of fill all those spaces. And then you can really start spending some money on the Byfields and whoever else and have those depth pieces come from your prospect pool, which we've been hammering for.
I think we'll just, it's weird because I mentioned this to you, Joe, earlier is, we've almost kind of tabled the whole problem with the left side of the defense for 2 years because we'll be right back in the situation kind of looking at the Kings prospect pool. I would be very surprised if they don't draft a left shot defenseman with a second round pick that they have this year. So, because, I mean,
after Gavrikov and Bjornfoot, there's really nobody there. I mean, Kirill Kasanov is still in Russia. We don't even know mm-hmm. what that situation is going to be like. I think he's still signed till 2025.
So he re-signed.
Yeah, maybe he comes over at the end of Gavrikov's deal and he kind of is a replacement there. That could be something to watch for. But, I mean, to have that short-term deal is, yeah, it helps with the salary cap situation. And maybe it's better to have a player like Gavrikov signed for a shorter term. But once that deal is done, the Kings don't really have any heir apparent. I mean, it'll be something to watch. Obviously, it's two years down the line, so maybe they can make a trade here and there.
Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, this is definitely helpful for the time being.
It'd be interesting to see because it's like they're trying to win, so they traded the last two first-round picks. The Kings did that before, trade away all their first-round picks, but they won two cups. Right now, they haven't won anything. Do they get ballsy again and trade 2024's first? Or do they need a high pick to restock, you know, that prospect, that flow of influx of young talent, young cheap talent, or are they going to sell it off again?
At this point, I think they find more value in the middle rounds than they do in the first and second round.
Well, and here's the thing. This is the other and again, to go back to the trade, it's like I think it's getting yes, the Kings got off a little light, but you have lost two trade assets for the deadline next year. Mm-hmm. And Helge Grand's in a second round pick. That matters. You come deadline time, if you're a team that is looking to add and looking to push for a Stanley Cup, they do still have a first. So that's obviously significant, but you don't have a second round pick in 23. You don't have a second round, or excuse me, you don't have a second round pick in 24. You don't have a third round pick in 24. So the problem with this deal is I understand it had to be done, but you've taken some bullets. You've taken away some ammunition, if you will, as you think about look ahead to next year's deadline. So when you talk about Randy in terms of making trades and stuff like that, well, they did just lose a pick. So now if they trade a first round pick next year, you're without a pick for the first and the second round next year because of the Peterson deal. So I don't know. It's there's a lot to digest here. There's a lot to kind of look at, and I know that's maybe looking a little too far ahead, but you know, it's something that to consider at least.
No, it happens. I mean, I'm doing my dynasty fantasy football draft now. I've been trying to trade away my 2025 first round pick for the last 3 days. Can't get it done. All right, well, that's too far. Like, I can't even think that far ahead. So it's like, you know, I get it. You know, people want the here and now. They want the freshness. They want to know. Which I'm surprised Columbus gave up the first. Like, they're in the rebuild too.
I didn't like this deal.
Yeah, before. I thought originally I thought it was only the first round pick that they gave up, and then Joe mentioned it was also a second, and I was like, oh, okay.
Like, I know.
I understand it's Provorov. You're only getting Provorov. It's only $4 million.
Yeah,
but a first and a second round pick.
Yikes. The only thing I'll say especially to that in this draft, is maybe. Too, right? Yeah, maybe. Like, I don't think people expected him to be this bad last year. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
Maybe they're saying, okay, let's regroup here. We've got some really good talent coming up prospect wise, some really good talent. They've got some really good NHL talent, right? Johnny Gaudreau's there. Patrick Laine is there. They got a new coach coming in. So maybe their thought is, and remember, they lost Werenski all season last year. He got hurt. So now Werenski's back. Provorov doesn't have to play top pair minutes. Maybe they're looking at this the same way that Kings looked at Gavrikov. You know, Gavrikov was atrocious last year in Columbus, but he fit not playing those minutes, those matchups in Los Angeles' system. Provorov really just hasn't been that good, in my opinion, in Philly. Maybe they're just like, hey, if we slot him on the second pair behind Werenski, maybe this works out okay.
Who's on the right side?
Well, that's the thing. It could be your boy, Jurecek.
Mm-hmm. I know Jurecek. Is he going to be number one? He's going to be the right number one, right, D? Because I know he won AHL honors for best defenseman.
They have Boquist, too.
Boquist, who I like quite a bit.
Gudbranson. I mean, I'm with you, Joe. Like, in terms of, like, teams that are on the right trajectory, Columbus is right there.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a lot of our favorite prospects. I mean, Brandon, you talked glowingly about Jurecek, and then once you brought him up, I started watching him a little bit in the World Juniors, and he impressed the hell out of me. He was like a man amongst boys playing against them. And then one of my favorite prospects in Kent Johnson out of Michigan. I think he's been great. And
Marchenko,
Cole Sillinger.
Emil Bremstrom is still like trying to figure it out. Like this is
they're
the French gonna get, Alexander.
And they're probably going to get, they're probably going to get Carlson, right? Which our boy
Sixten
Funquist raved about for two seasons. If you were Columbus, let's just stay on the Columbus. This is kind of a side topic. And you're number three overall. You getting Carlson? Or are you swinging for the fences and getting Michkov?
Oh, I'm going Michkov all the way. And I actually I don't understand why Ducks fans are so set on getting Fantilli. Did you guys read Promnin's report?
I have not yet.
He has a higher upside for Michkov than he does for Bedard.
He's not the only one.
Yeah. People are just writing off Michkov. And I think a lot of it maybe has to do with the whole Russia situation.
Yep.
But and we also haven't really seen Michkov play even in any international games because of that situation. But
that's the sole reason.
This was a player that was considered one of the top two prospects, for sure, lock top two prospects in the NHL just a couple of seasons ago. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, we haven't really seen him play, so we don't really know. No, I mean, if I'm Columbus or a team that has so many prospects and like really high upset prospects already, I mean, I'm swinging the fences for.
That's the thing, right? Because you've got – because they had another defenseman. Who was the – didn't they – Matichuk, Denton Matichuk, right?
Yeah.
Last year with Juracek. Then when you go up to their forward group, like Goudreau's there forever. Laine's got three more years. Boone Jenner's got three more years. We just mentioned Johnson, Marchenko. Like, is it 3 years, I think, that Michkov would be – was it after
He signed a three-year deal, yeah.
So it'd be after 3 years that he would come over. So after 3 years, you still have Goudreau. Laine would be a free agent. So we'll see there, I guess. But you would still have those young kids. And plus those defensemen. I mean, I can see that. I can see that. But to your point with Anaheim too, I mean, that's another team with a ton of prospects that they could bode well to just let it ride here for a few years.
I don't know if Verbeek would want to have his first real high profile draft pick be a player that the fans don't see for that long. I think, I mean, from that point of view, I guess it would make sense for them to draft a player that's going to make an immediate impact.
Well, most GMs, right? Because a lot of these guys,
especially a brand new GM. I mean, it's such a high profile pick. I mean,
and listen, you
get number two after losing Bedard. I mean, you're going to have to make something lemonade out of lemons there.
And I think Kekalainen, I don't know that he goes the Michkov route because it's like this guy, what have they done? What have they done?
Yeah.
Under Kekalainen. He makes a lot of noise, but at the end of the day, they haven't done a whole lot really, I don't think. So he may want somebody a little bit sooner, like a Carlson, to kind of, you know, maybe speed this thing up a little bit.
Yeah, but what if he turns out to be Kucherov? Like that what, you know, you're saying he's Russian or whatever, he's a bust. But it's like, yeah, he's signed until 25, 26. He's making millions of dollars at 18 years old over in Russia. I don't blame the kid. But you look at his stats, like he was almost a point per game player at 18 in the KHL this year. He was over a point per game player last year in the MHL and the VHL. And he was a 2.5 point per game player against people of his age group in the U18s in the United States. And that was with Bedard in the tournament. He had the highest point total in the tournament. So this kid is legit. And if I'm the Ducks or if I'm Columbus, I'm swinging for the fences. Cause you're not like, what is Fantilli or what is Carlson going to do for you in the next two seasons? Like to bring your team, like you're looking at Michkov spending two seasons in Russia and then coming over and then having a Kaprizov type impact to your team right away. Like that's what you're looking for. Like you don't need him to mature here.
It's just so much uncertainty. That's the only problem.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the whole reason. I mean, we're not even going to see Russia in any international tournaments for the next few years, it sounds like. So who knows? I mean, yeah, it's a tough situation.
Could you imagine if he falls down below four and some random team gets him?
I'm hoping he falls to the second round and the Kings draft him.
Yeah. Hey, the Kings, and let's trade away almost a lot of the players on our team and our 24 first, 25 first, 26 first, and we'll move up and get Michkov.
There you go.
Trade grades. So we have two trade grades here. We're going to talk about the trade deadline, because all three of us said that this was going to be predicated on if any of these guys re-sign, how well they do in the playoffs. So we'll revisit that and then grade this upcoming this trade so far with the unknown, and we'll have a little reason for it. So I'll start off. My trade grade at the deadline was pretty harsh. I think this signing makes it better just because I think the first round pick was used twice, not only to get Gavrikov, but then facilitate the Cal Peterson trade. So, you know, double duty there for that first. So I think the trade was then worth it, giving it a solid BB+, because I think the play was good. I think we got multiple value, not only from us trading it, but Columbus trading it to facilitate this. It moves the contract out. Gavrikov's here for 2 years. The contract isn't too bad. So overall, I'm giving the trade deadline trade a B+. And I think just moving the contract to get it going is probably going to be a B. We're just going to be right there in the solid passing grades for me.
Yeah, I think at the time of the deadline deal, I believe I gave a B- or right around B- C+ deal, because I think a lot of it had to do with we weren't really too impressed with the type of player that they were getting in Gavrikov. I mean, we only had his type of play style when he was with Columbus. Obviously, I'll speak for myself. I ate a lot of crow because of the play. He definitely improved and impressed me to the point where he played with the Kings. So I'm glad I was wrong there. And then so to kind of take it full circle here, that they were able to re-sign him, and it didn't turn into that like Andre Sequeira situation where you trade a first round pick and you don't even really see the player anymore. I think it's kind of a big move by Blake to keep that type of player, especially a player who's going to hit UFA that could have got a little bit more probably. So to keep him with the organization for a couple more years after pretty much swinging for the fences by sending a first round pick to Columbus, I would give Blake the trade an A- on that one.
I was a C+ at the deadline. I just didn't think he was the impactful defenseman that they needed. I was definitely wrong on his abilities. He was way better than I thought. You know, didn't get him past the first round. I think they would have went just as far as they did if they had Roy and Durzi still. So I don't know. I mean, he wasn't. I don't know. Again, that's not his fault per se. So I definitely increased my grade. I'll give it a B. I just got a real hard. I'm not giving Rob Blake an A in any fashion here. He did a good job getting out of it, but I look back, it's like
where's the downgrade for you? Where are you downgrading from an A? Like, where's the thorn in your boots, if you will?
I guess my thought is a B, but the more I think about it, I may even drop it just a little bit lower, just because I can't separate it. I know, Russ, you're just looking at it isolating from the trade, and that's probably more fair than I'm being. But I can't help but look at it and say, you traded a first at the deadline, you traded Helge Granz, you traded a second, you're eating a portion of somebody else's contract. Now, you did bring back, obviously, Gavrikov is, if I'm looping that all in, it's just like, boy, I'm not going to give him a passing grade for getting out of his own contract. He made the mess. He did the best he probably could to get out of it, but I'll give him a B- because I can't separate the two. I think I said it in the chat. I don't know what chat I said it in. The whole situation's an L. It may be a lowercase L because he was able to get out of it without getting up a first or a Spence. Let's just, to me, the whole situation is poor asset management. Now, every GM is going to run into these situations. They're not going to bat 1,000. Blake has been excellent with his trades, and he doesn't miss a whole lot. This one was a miss, and unfortunately, this miss cost him some assets, and that's frustrating, but it is what it is.
We talked about it a little bit with like other things like the Kovalchuk, right? We saw the reason behind it didn't work out and he got out of his own mess, and we praised him. Hey, at least he was able to move out of that situation. And now that you're telling it, Joe, like that's kind of how it feels. Like he put himself in the situation. He did what he needed to get out of the situation. Now we're out of it and we're relieved. But really, was it a good scenario for the Kings and their assets?
Listen, so the difference is with Kovalchuk, I think there was like one last Hail Mary kick at the can to try to make a run.
Exactly.
And then it didn't work. And it's like, okay, now we're officially rebuilding. So whatever. With Peterson, hey, he's a goalie. You don't need to sign him or most goalies to the deal he got. Look what Edmonton did. What in God's name was Edmonton doing with Jack Campbell? Well, I'm very curious to see what some of these goalies get this offseason. Korpisalo being one, Freddie Anderson being another, Tristan Jarry being another, Semyon Varlamov. I know he's older, so that'll probably be short. But like, look at what the Vegas Golden Knights are doing. If you have a system in place, a goalie can be just serviceable and be A-okay. They've churned through goalies, Vegas has, all season long. So it was just a bad all around. It was just bad. Now, again, if I got to go looking at it the way Russ is looking at it, just solely, like, I was worried about a first, worried about Spence. I wouldn't do either of those. And it didn't cost him. So, but again, when I look at it, is Granz a second round pick? Those are a couple things, two less assets to trade at next year's deadline. You know, I factor that in. And I don't know. So I can't go an A. I can't go an A. I can't go an A minus. I'm going to go B minus just because I can't separate the whole thing.
That's why.
Nowadays, like at the time, Randon, going back to the Kovalchuk thing, at that point, none of this mattered because they were going to rebuild. But now every asset is so important right now as the Kings are looking to take that jump from making playoffs to, okay, we want to actually win now in the playoffs. So you need every dollar of cap space, every asset in the potential trade that you can have. And, you know, he lost some of that.
Are you surprised that they couldn't use a Ford instead of Helge Granz? Like, it seemed like a weird position for Helge Granz, right? Had a down season, really wasn't that impactful this year. Like, you think they could have traded away a higher or a prospect with a higher, trajectory as of last season? You know, maybe they didn't want to trade a Fantilli or a player of that nature.
Well, I don't know.
The thing with Granz, too, I mean, he didn't have a path with the Kings. That's the thing. It's still almost a position of strength. I mean, it's not like we just talked about earlier. It's not anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was still a position of strength that Rob Blake was dealing from in terms of the right side.
Yeah, and listen, Granz is – I was really high on him entering last season. I was really high on him entering two seasons ago and then entering again last season. And yeah, he had a down season. It was not a great season for him, but he's 21 years old and he's played 2 years of North American hockey. So I'm still pretty bullish on him. I'll be interested to see, but everybody wants size and now we're okay just trading a 6'4" defenseman. Who can skate, by the way. But no, I think he's still very young, and the timeline probably wasn't going to work out, clearly, Russ, because of everything else the Kings have on the right side. It's a little frustrating that you're selling low on the guy, and the best you can get out of Helge Granz and a second-round pick is, what did they end up getting, $2 million worth of cap space in the deal? Because they did eat Provorov. So what, $3 million in cap space?
Walker and Provorov like wash each other out. So we got $5 million of space.
Yeah. So I don't know. Again, it's one of those deals where it had to happen. I'm not saying that it shouldn't have happened. It just leaves a sour taste in my mouth because those are just giving assets away for a little bit of space. And it's frustrating, but glad it's over. I'll say that.
What'll be even more frustrating is when we watch players when we watch Brock Faber go crazy in Minnesota and Helge Granz go crazy in Philadelphia. That would be a little bit more frustrating.
No, I'm not going to be frustrated with Brock Faber. The Kings got Kevin Fiala.
No, yeah.
I will be mad if Helge Granz turns into something because
then you're like, the $5 million space. Yeah.
You used him in a salary dump to open up $3 million worth of space because of your own mistake. That would bother me.
With the whole Cal Peterson situation, and I think a lot of fans probably thought that we might had to have tied a player like Jordan Spence to the deal. So I think that's a little bit of a win there because, I mean, when I was talking about the deal, we thought Jordan Spence would have to be the player.
Or first.
So, yeah.
or or a first round pick. And so I think the fact that it's only a second and Grants, which I say only, just comparing it to a first,
I agree with
that. I think it's a little bit of a win there.
In that sense, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But we, now, in fairness, we made all that up. We have no idea if the team is even asking for a first or Jordan Spieth on it. But I agree. In that sense, yes.
And then also, just to go back to the Cal Peterson contract itself, and I talked about this earlier. I mean, at the time of signing, I've been super critical of the contract, which I won't stop being critical. I think the length was just too long. I would have liked it to only be 2 years as opposed to three. But at that time, that was the going rate for goaltenders at that time. I mean, you look at Matt Murray had just made $6 million the year before in Ottawa. Philip Grubauer got $15 million contract. Like you mentioned, Jack Campbell, too. That was the going rate for goaltenders, and none of them have really paid off. And now we're getting to the point where
– Grubauer won a championship, didn't he?
I think he was a backup, wasn't he? With no.
Yeah, it was oh my God, Kemper won.
Yeah, Kemper was the starter. He was the backup. But I think it's just we'll start to see, like Joe says, hashtag goalies. I wonder if teams just are saying, okay, we just need to find a diamond in the rough, like our own Phoenix Copley that could just come in and stabilize net. Doesn't have to stand on his head. Doesn't have to steal games for us, but just make saves when we need you to make a save. And then hopefully the offense can pick it up. Because I think the Kings are at the point where they have an explosive enough offense where they don't need to win games 3-2 or 2-1. They can win games like 5-4, 5-3 at this point. And I think it would be more exciting for us to watch, probably a little bit more frustrating because we'll probably get more jerseyisms at that point. But, hey, I mean, if you have a fun offense to pair it together with, then sign me up for that. That'll be fun. I just don't know what channel I'm going to be watching it on right now.
Somebody in the chat saying that, you know, it was the going rate for starting goalies and Peterson was the starting goalie that year that he showed. I mean, he had excellent stats, you know,
on a bad team.
It was on a real bad team. And so, you know, yeah, it was just small sample size. You know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, right? Small sample size with Kempe. He had one good year. Do you pay him? Does it pay off? Okay. It has paid off more. Do you pay him after one good year? Has it paid off? I don't believe so. Joe says it has. Russell, I think you're kind of halfway in between. So it's always going to be those types of things, right? My Niners paid Jimmy Garoppolo after five games to be the richest quarterback in football. Did it win them a championship? No, it did not. So you're Giants paying Danny Dimes $40 million for throwing 16 touchdowns.
Overpay.
So it happens all the time. Like, you have to take that chance sometimes. It's not the situation the Kings probably would have liked. Hey, he played really well right before we have to pay him. So what are we going to pay him? Is he going to want – do we let him go and risk him being a Vezina winner somewhere else, or do we pay him the going rate, like you said? I think it's a lose-lose situation for the Kings at that point. And sometimes Kings get strapped into those situations where they have to pay the guy – what he did based on one season, because that's what his value is at that moment. Debo Samuel, again, Niners, 1,900 total yards, was a wide back, revolutionized what the receiver position was, got paid $25 million. He sucked last season. So it just really just depends on the team. Sometimes those hit, sometimes they don't.
I'd have to look back. No. I'd have to look back, because I feel like Peterson was the first one. Like, Campbell signed after. Kemper signed after. These guys were all after Peterson. Who signed? I'm trying to think of, like, what leverage did Cal Peterson have? Like, I know that ended up being the going rate, but what goalie was being signed? Omark, was that after? Or the same
month? Before.
When did he sign?
2021 September. I'd have to look back, because I know Cap Friendly does a compare this contract. Maybe I can pull it up. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is
Allmark was signed in July of 2021.
I don't mind when GMs take gambles. That's the thing, is we're seeing
just not on goalies.
That's exactly. That's
well, I think you're in hindsight
on a goalie. But at that time, I mean, we were just like thinking, like, okay, Jonathan Quick's time's coming to an end, and Cal Peterson's supposed to be the heir apparent. So
yeah,
That was everybody's mindset at that point.
And again, I think he was, as Brandon pointed out, he was coming off a pretty good season. He was coming off a really good world championships. So his stock was rising. It was. I do just wonder.
Drew Bauer was that same year. Frederick Anderson with the Maple Leafs, or the Hurricanes, Mrazek were all signed within that same time span. Well, I guess Holpe was a one-year deal with Dallas. But
okay. Okay. Fair enough. Again, and listen, Blake's not had many misses. That was a miss. You know, every GM's going to have him. And he, you know, he got out of it. And we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Now the question is, like, what happens in that? No, I mean that'll be the big situation, right?
Yeah, because the free agents, I'd written so for those curious, I did write a piece about potential free agents, and then I wrote a piece about potential trade targets. So there are some options in both. Obviously, the trade targets are going to be costly. They're going to be costly multiple ways in assets and in cap, because you're going to acquire a goalie that's got a number to him. I don't know what's there, and at least in the guys that I looked at from a trade standpoint, because now the Kings, again, they don't have a first. They just traded a second for next year. So I don't know what they're trading. And, you know, at this point, so I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a Spence. Maybe they do trade now. They look to some of the forward prospects, right? Maybe it's a Pennelly. Maybe it's a Kromiak. Maybe it's somebody like this in a deal, in a package with, I don't know, maybe an Alex Iafallo or Victor Arvidsson to move money. You know, this is
or where you just gets, let the kids play. Let the this kids where it play.
Gets tricky. Yeah. So the kicker is, though, who's you have to sign a goalie. And I don't know they're going to get a goalie for like $1 million. You know, you're probably
Matty Valalta.
You're probably going to have to pay a couple $1 million for a
goalie. How many fans would that scare going into next season with Matty Valalta and Phoenix Copley?
Not as many as it would have been if it was Cal Peterson and Phoenix Copley.
That's probably true.
Sandoval comes in here. Go ahead.
I'm not writing off Corpusalo not being re-signed. I could definitely see
Corpusalo
making a little bit less of a deal to stay with LA, depending on how he liked his time here. It's weird. We just heard a lot about Gavrikov and how he acclimated so well to the locker room, but we never really heard much about Corpusalo, because I think a lot of it had to do with his kind of personality matches a little bit of Copley's kind of stoic, just calm demeanor personality. But I wonder if Corpusalo sees Gavrikov staying now. I wonder if that gives him a little bit more of an incentive to stay.
I don't think
he'll be that expensive.
But I think he could be the most expensive of the free agent goalies. Like when you look at it, Tristan Jarry,
Aiden Hill
could make a boatload. I don't want to say boatload. He could make a few.
That's going to be the scary. I would not want to be a fan of the team that gives Aiden Hill a $15 million deal. That's
over under Campbell's deal for Aiden Hill.
Under.
I don't think.
But you know where he works, though. He'd work in Carolina. Carolina and Vegas have goalie friendly systems. He would work in either one of those. And listen, LA's not like a bad system per se. They're a good defensive structure team, but they're not quite to the level of those two in terms of the types of chances that they give up. And now I'm with you, Russ. Like, I'm not ruling out Corpusalo. I do think I look at the free agent goalies. I mean, Varlamov's probably getting a one-year deal. He may even stay on the island. Freddie Anderson could make more, but again, a 33-year-old dealt with a lot of injuries. He's a risky one. Tristan Jarry couldn't make a save. So when I look at this list, Corpusalo is upright. He's healthy. He played pretty well down the stretch for the Kings, had an up and down playoff, but against one of the highest scoring teams in NHL history, really. So I wouldn't be surprised if he can make like a three. Hopefully teams are smartening up and they're not giving 5x3s and 5x5s. Maybe he's like a 3x3 type of goalie. But when I look, what goalie's getting that right now? I mean, and I don't know. So I actually think he could be one of the more attractive free agent goalies that's available as a USA.
would suck to be a free agent this summer because of the situation a lot of teams are in right now. Yeah, I think that's why Gavrikov was only wanted that 2-year deal. He wants to hit that bag again.
So do you think Korpisalo would be like a 1-by-3 and then he goes and tries to play on a team that's probably going to get over 100 points for a full season?
I wouldn't be surprised.
What's tricky about this is there's the potential trade market is pretty flooded. So you've got these UFA goalies. We'll see who hits UFA. Carolina's got two in Ranta and Anderson. We'll see if either of them make it. We'll see if Varlamov makes it, right? We'll see if Hill makes it. But then you've got Connor Hellebuck, who could go. I don't think UC Saros gets traded, but his name's out there. Thatcher Demko could be back. I mean,
Kings
market.
Asked, according to multiple sources.
Yeah. You've got the two goalies in you've got Toronto's got a couple of goaltenders because Matt Murray is still there under a terrible contract. Samsonov is a restricted free agent, and Hull is there. So there's three goalies.
The Devils too, right?
The Devils have Schmid, Mackenzie Blackwood's an RFA potential trade for him, and Vanacek is under contract. Again, I talked about the Flames, Markstrom, Vladar, and Wolf. Wolf is ready by all accounts, so there could be a goalie on the move there. There's a lot of potential movement between the pipes, so I don't know. And again, going back to Vegas, like Logan Thompson, but we've seen them; they don't care. They could easily win a cup with Aiden Hill, and he's out the door. Would that surprise anybody? The way Vegas operates. He could just command too much money and they could roll it back with Thompson and Laurent Brossoit. They could just re-sign Brossoit to a cheap deal because he's coming off an injury. So like there's a lot of potential movement in the goaltending market right now. So I genuinely don't know where it goes.
Some free agents here. You got obviously Quick will be a free agent. He's not coming back for Varlamov. Bishop, Anderson, Bernier, Talbot, Jari, Khudobin. I don't know how to pronounce this. Alex Nilovich from Detroit.
Nedeljkovic. That's a reclamation project.
James Reimer. I mean, you got Aiden Hill, Mike Smith, Antti Raanta, Corey Schneider. I mean, a lot of these guys are super old, but.
Or hurt.
Yeah. But there's tons of guys out there. I mean, there's so many names. I mean, Martin Jones, would that be, he had a decent season.
No, absolutely not. No. Like the names I would be okay with on that list. Varlamov. I actually think Varlamov would be a solid guy to pair with Copley. Neither of them have to play a
full wasn't trying time. To give you a heart attack. I'm just naming the names.
Like I think when looking at free agents and excluding trade talk right now, like Varlamov, I think is a go look at that guy's numbers. He's a consistent NHL goaltender. At 35, he's not going to be playing a heavy workload, but I think if he shares with Copley, the Kings are in good shape. I'm a Freddie Anderson guy. I think he's really good when healthy. That's a big if. But if he's only sharing the load, maybe not such a bad thing. No interest in Tristan Jarry. Guy can't make us. He really, really struggled at times last year and suffered a couple big injuries. So I'm nervous about him. Nedeljkovic is interesting if you believe in a potential reclamation project, but boy, was he terrible last year. Antti Raanta I've always been a fan of, but he can't stay healthy. You know who I really like here is Jaro Halak. The kicker is he's perfect as a true backup. Like the Kings don't have a number one. Copley isn't like a one, but I think Halak would be a really solid as a legit two, but I don't know that I pair him. So I don't know. I don't know if any of those names interest you, Russ. And there's a chance not any of them hit the market. Like
for the last four years, I was looking up Varlamov stats for you there, Joe. He's since 19, 45 games, 36, 31, 23. So his games have decreased. But you're looking at 262, 204, 291, 27, and then save percentage 914, 929, 911, 913.
Just solid.
The only problem is just he plays for the Islanders. The Islanders stack five bodies in front of the net, and
The Kings play a 1-3-1 and aren't exactly a bad defensive team. So I think he would be okay.
You don't see UC Saros getting traded?
I don't know. I'm gonna say no, just because I don't know that Barry Trotz comes in and trades like the face of the franchise right off the hop. I feel like
they just want to turn a new leaf and just let Askarov just take the reins there.
Didn't Askarov just lose his job in the playoffs? Isn't he not even starting?
Oh, I don't know.
Did I miss that? I could have missed. Maybe it was just one game.
The highlights of him doing push-ups with.
I know who was the goal of the year though. Jesper Walstedt was goal.
Was he really?
Don't remind me.
I still want Brandt Clark. You're not gonna.
I don't know.
Still want Brandt Clark. I want to say Askarov lost his gig, or at least temporarily, in these playoffs in the last round.
I'll look it up. The AHL stats here in a second.
But
man, I mean, if the Kings would have figured out a way to trade into the first round and got Clark and Walstedt, we wouldn't be in this situation right now. Just saying. I mean, hey. Could you imagine if the Kings had a goalie like Walstedt in the system? I mean, we'd be in heaven talking about the situation the Kings are in for the future.
Well, but like I always say when you say that, Russ, the Kings are – they want to win now. He doesn't help them now. If the Kings are talking about being cup contenders now.
He would help them next year.
You don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Walstedt could come in.
These goalies, they take time. They take time. Not a lot of – look at some of these guys come in. They struggle. They take a little bit.
Yeah, but he could be paired with Copley this year. And you know Copley can do the job.
Do we?
That's the thing. I think some of these – I wonder if some of these younger goalies are just even some of the goalies that come into the league. I wonder if – this whole splitting time maybe hurts them a little bit.
It's funny you mentioned that. And now
Askarov played 12 games, so he played most of the games. I don't see another.
But he didn't
Milwaukee
play.
Goalie played yeah, four.
But he's played last four.
Yeah, he probably played the last four then.
I think he's played the last four.
But his playoff stats weren't that bad. I mean, 2-7, 2-7-0, 9-0-3.
Well, yeah, I think because what's his name? Devin Cooley has played at least the last two or three games. And again, I don't know that I haven't been following it, watching it. So I have no idea what happened to cause it, but I'm interested to see, you mentioned that Russ with the young goalies, the whole situation in Buffalo with Devin Levi, because what went kind of under the radar a little bit with the whole trade with the Philly and LA was there was a report that Carter Hart could be on the move soon. And that perked up a lot of people, me included, because I still say, hey, is there anything with the Kings? But a lot of Buffalo folks are like, this could be interesting. And it's like, you got Devin Levi, who just came in and stole the show last
Monster.
Year.
Yeah. The Jedi.
He seems like Buffalo seems a great fit for Hellebuck, a one-year guy. To kind of bridge that, or even John Gibson for that matter, to kind of bridge that with Levi. But yeah, I'm wondering too, Russ, because a guy like Levi, where is he going to play? I feel like you can't hand that kid the reins. I mean, we've seen goalies play well. Carter Hart was really good. Carter Hart's also really struggled at times.
Yeah.
Same with Spencer Knight, was really bad, then kind of bounced back. And it's a position where you kind of it's better to have these guys in the minors for at least a couple seasons, like you're seeing with Walstedt and Askarov. Let them get used to the pro game, because especially if you're looking at a team, depends on the team. Like Buffalo, they're going to want to make playoffs next year. So do you want to give Levi 45 games? That's a lot for really to for a team that wants to make playoffs. I think that's a tall ask. So I don't know.
The Jedi will come through.
Another team you mentioned there is Florida with Spencer Knight. I wonder what happens there with Bobrovsky having this resurgence a little bit here. I mean, he's still signed for, I think,
forever.
Two or three more years, about $10 million. And I know Spencer Knight's going
through. The ESPN contract is shorter than his.
I know he's going through a little bit of off-ice issues there, but, I mean, I've always liked that player. I thought
Spencer Knight's in therapy.
Yeah, he's in player assistance.
Off-ice issues or something like that. But I don't know. We'll see.
Alex Leon, UFA. Lion.
Hey, that could be an option.
We'll see. Got plenty of goalies to talk about, and we got all summer to talk about them. So we'll see how that works out. Appreciate all you fans coming in here. The chat was electric tonight. Thank you guys for being in there and talking back and forth. We appreciate it. Smash that like button to help us out. Go comment in there. That helps all our algorithms. So appreciate you guys. Find all of our articles at hockeyroyalty.com. Go get yourself some merch, some new reads while you're on the can. Check out and subscribe to all of our Twitter feeds at the bottom, hockey_royalty, Rando Commando 24, NHL Russell, and JW Panarino. If you want all your rain coverage, Kopitar for HOF, DraftKings code THPN. If you want to try to win some money here for the rest of these playoffs, will Florida get swept? You want to bet that? I'm sure there are odds for that at this moment. So appreciate you guys. And as always on this podcast, go Kings, go.